And now it's time for today's podcast. Before we begin, though, I want to let you know about a unique ebook that's yours to download free today. It's called Googling God, and in it you'll find truth-filled answers to the top five questions people ask online about God. Googling God outlines core apologetic responses to life's deepest questions, helping you know why you believe what you believe. More importantly, it will prepare you to respond with confidence and grace to questions and objections that come your way as you live and speak for Christ. Download your free copy of Googling God today by visiting premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources.
Understand, defend, and share your faith with confidence. This is Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
Thank you for joining us on Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson. And before we hear from today's guest, just a quick reminder to visit premierunbelievable.com for more shows, articles, and resources. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, then please do consider rating and reviewing it on your podcast platform. But now for today's show. I am delighted to be joined by Rachel Heffer, Head of Mission for the Evangelical Alliance, and we're going to be looking at some research about the state of faith in the UK. Now, the original Talking Jesus report came out back in 2015, and further research was undertaken in 2022. I'm going to be talking to Rachel about some of the key findings in this research and whether there were any significant differences between the 2015 report and the 2022 report. We're obviously now in 2024, so I also want to know if any of these insights are still relevant to us today. And I suppose after 2 years of reflecting on this research, has anything changed? What have they learned? And how can we put some of this knowledge into practice? Rachel, in the 2022 Talking Jesus research, 34% of practicing Christians in the UK, and we've defined that term in an earlier podcast, what we mean by practicing Christians, but 34% of them said that growing up in a Christian family was the top influence in bringing them to faith. Now, this is a smaller influence than it was in 2015 when 41% listed growing up in a Christian family as a key influence. Do you know why that figure has dropped, that growing up in a Christian family being the top influence?
Yeah, it's interesting that, isn't it? I mean, one, I think that whole statistic, you said 40%+ and 34% does point to the importance of family discipleship, doesn't it? The fact that actually as parents and as youth workers engaging with church, as church leaders engaging with families rather, that actually we see this as a really important hub. The fact that that number has dropped only speaks to me of the fact of that as a parent myself, as one of two teenage boys, often it's really tricky to have confidence in our own elements of being able to sort of face share. Life is busy, isn't it? Life is full. Time often gets squeezed out. However, we know that it's really important if we're wanting our children or our teenagers or our young adults to be brought up to know something of Christian faith and to hopefully make a decision to follow Jesus for themselves. But I think what this challenges me and church leaders that we engage with as well through my work at the EA and through the wider partnership is to just really look at the importance of how we connect with those families. As we know, lockdown coming through a pandemic, all of that was deeply challenging when our churches were shut, when certainly youth ministry was quite decimated, not much could happen, children's ministry and so on was really tricky. Our churches across the UK did an absolutely valiant job of trying to really cheer on and champion families. But it might be that during that period of time, actually some of that family discipleship piece was really deeply challenging for us. But I think where it leaves us now is just recognising that, yes, there's a challenge, but still people would say, practicing Christians that were asked what was the biggest influence, would chart that actually that influence of parent voices speaking into their young lives was of critical importance in their faith journey. So I think as parents and those interacting with families, we need to have confidence in that. And again, hopefully, before we retract the research and do it again in 5 years' time, we'd love to see that statistic, that number going up.
You definitely already touched on this, but that growing up in a Christian family, the influence is significantly lower in the younger generations than it is in the older generations. Do you think there's a reason for this? And I guess, do you have any thoughts about what impact this might have in the future if that number continues to drop with each younger generation?
Well, yeah, that should be a real challenge to us, shouldn't it, as the church? If that number continues to drop, then we see that actually the families within our communities, whose voice of the parents is still the loudest voices in our young people's ears, isn't it? You know, despite obviously peers or church or mentors or media or whatever, it is the parent voice, then it is a concern to us. And so as the church, I think my encouragement, and certainly many that we work with, would be, how can we resource families? How can we encourage them? One of the things we found in another piece of research that looked back at COVID and how the role of the family had been able to look at this discipleship issue, one of the interesting stats that came out was that what parents wanted from the church was not necessarily lots of resources, even during COVID and beyond, but it was relationship. They wanted relationship with the church leader and with others to help them and enable them to know how to engage maybe with some of the gritty conversations that they might have with their young people or children, you know, starting at a very young age. So I think there's a challenge for the church to actually say, how do we bring confidence into family discipleship? How do we enable, yes, busy parents who will always feel guilty that they're not doing enough, myself included, but how do we encourage them in bite-sized chunks maybe to carve out that time to actually engage their children, maybe around the Bible, maybe around, you know, looking at how to live and all the character stuff, leaning into God, prayerfulness and all those things. So that, again, we see that actually parents will feel confident, yes, with some of the tricky situations or cultural conversations rather with their young people. But sometimes I think, yeah, it's a challenge for the church first and foremost to look at what do parents need to know? How can we equip them? How can we strengthen them? And then encouraging parents themselves to carve out that time so that their children do, with the influences of others. Again, it takes a village, as we say, but that parents do carve out time to actually really disciple their own kids as well and have confidence in that.
So given everything that you have said, do you think there's any advice that you, as a parent yourself of two teenagers, would give to those busy parents who aren't confident about discipleship, I guess, to help the children, their own children, develop their faith?
Yeah, well, what a tricky one. I think the first thing that comes to mind is, actually, we know that we can't do it all. You know, we strive to always be the best parents that we can be. But I remember my own parents who were amazing and very much brought myself and my brother up, you know, to know about God and so on. You know, they said to us, even as I was growing up, you know, we'll have messed up. We won't have said it all. We won't have, you know, we'll have done things either to, you know, to unintentionally hurt you or you know, whatever. And we just don't always get it right, do we? But I'm sure for so many of us, our intentionality is, of course, to share something of the love of God, something of our own faith journey with our children. I think one of the things that I've thought even over the last 6 months or so with my own two boys, as I mentioned, they're 12 and 15, is that actually as they're at this sort of age now and, you know, life decisions and friendships and all the challenges, again, that culture and backdrop that they live amongst throws at them, is to just let myself off the hook a little bit, but whilst being intentional in other ways, but just to, I say just, it's still a big ask, but to model something of what it looks like to do life and faith hand in hand. That authenticity of actually, boys, this is how we do life. When we face tricky stuff, we pray. When we face big decisions, we lean into God. We pray and we seek his will. And even recently, you know, in recent months, actually, that's become apparent in some of either myself or my husband's world of, you know, where there's anxiety or whether there's decisions to be made, whether there's challenges with wider family or in their own friendships. You know, this is where life and this is where our faith has impact. We put this stuff into practice and God is absolutely with us there in some of the challenges and the good stuff. So I suppose my encouragement to parents would be, yes, absolutely. Try and find rhythms of engaging young people around prayer and the Bible. Absolutely. I don't mean we let ourselves off the hook in that regard. Of course, we want to feed some of this stuff in whilst recognizing that time is stretched and lives are busy. But I think actually what our children will surely see in us, and I hope, like with my own boys, that when they're adults, they'll look back and remember, is that actually that they had a real concept of how our faith and all that we profess to has real impact in the everyday and amongst those that we that we live amongst and want to come to know Jesus too, and that that'll be something of that, that they'll carry into their own decisions about faith and into the rest of their lives. So, yeah, I don't know whether that encourages anyone, but that would be something of my journey, I suppose, that I'm trying to live out with my teenagers at the moment too.
And is there anything you'd say specifically to young people who are maybe struggling with church or Christian events or not even attending them at all?
Well, I think, yeah, thinking of my own young people, again, as I said, very involved in my own church and mentoring, particularly of girls and what it is. I remember a wise person said to me when we saw some of our young people, this was well before the pandemic, but, you know, asking big questions, as of course teenagers do, pushing back maybe against the faith of the family and even leaving church. And a wise person said, even if they drop us, we will not drop them. So I think in part, I would say to maybe youth leaders and church leaders, you know, hold on to those relationships with the young people, invest in them, even if they're not coming into your buildings, because it doesn't mean that they're disappointed with Jesus. They might just be disenfranchised at that point in time with the church, or they're finding, you know, the commitments of teenagers and young people, as we know, are off the scale, aren't they? The busyness of life and so on. But I think for young people, I would say it's good to ask the questions. But I pray for so many of them that actually what some of them may hear, may have heard, may have engaged with even online, again, actually, you know, there's a deep-rooted sense of something that has impacted their lives that will stick with them and through many years. But yes, I think the pushback is not to be feared. We trust that many young people will be going on with God. But equally, I see many young people for whom they've seen something of truth. They're holding on to God. They're riding the roller coaster of all that life throws at them, but they do have this knowledge that God is their friend, that he is always with them. And I guess my encouragement to them would be, God will stick with you, you know, stick with other people who will encourage you in your faith journey. And again, we do life together in the messiness as well as the joy. So it's complex, isn't it? It's a challenging culture for our young people to live in. But as we know, God is the rock of ages and is steadfast, and he's with them today, as he always has been with us too.
Rachel, you sort of mentioned in the first episode how surprised some people were that reading the Bible was the second most important influence on people coming to faith. And I think I was particularly surprised by how specifically among the 18 to 24 year olds, it was the single largest influence. I think it was 38% said that that was the way that they came to faith. I think many people would also find it surprising that the Bible is the dominant way that Generation Z are coming to faith. Would you perhaps just say a little bit more about that? Because I feel like that is quite a surprising statistic. I mean, do we know how young people are accessing the Bible? Do we know why they're not put off by some of the difficult passages that we obviously quite often struggle with the Bible? Would you just say a little bit more about that, please?
I think in part it links to the statistic about people exploring faith so much. The overriding top answer was the digital presence. And certainly from what I know from my own young people that I engage with, again, they search so much online, don't they? I've been fascinated as well to at least on 10 to 12 occasions over the last 12 months have heard from church leaders that whilst maybe some of the Christians in their church community are not that great at inviting their friends, but like I said, a raft of church leaders have been fascinated to see people, either young adults or older, coming to my church for the first time as a result of directly engaging with faith or Bible content online via TikTok and via YouTube. And I just think the Holy Spirit is at work in the digital space. So I think with young people, there is this sense of being spending so much time, which again can drive us nuts sometimes as parents, can't it? But actually, the, you know, the importance of us getting good digital content online on TikTok, on YouTube, and much beyond podcasts and much wider too, because our young people are engaging. I think also they're looking for, as we mentioned earlier, just something of truth and of substance. I guess this against the backdrop sometimes of life being a bit frenetic, a bit chaotic, a bit confusing, actually something of truth and that grounds them, I think is what many young people are looking for. Really fascinating to know that they have this sense of going to the Bible to even look to explore that. And I guess from a sort of youth leader or church leader perspective, it does challenge me to actually say, how can we encourage the wider Christian body to be excited enough about the Bible that we look for ways to actually get it into our young people's hands, you know, digitally, paper-based or whatever. But also, as we know, there's a raft of brilliant apps, aren't there, with daily Bible readings, those nuggets. And again, I've seen in some of those, certainly not all, but some of my own young people from the church context, really avidly connect into that rhythm of looking at stuff online to fuel them in the midst of some of the chaos. And so it's really encouraging to just recognize that I think there is a sense of searching, certainly not for all, but for many, and anything that we can do to encourage them in that will hopefully be the stuff that takes root in their lives and really has impact.
Now, Rachel, when looking at the age that people came to faith, 33% said from birth. Now, obviously, some people might argue that you can't be born a Christian. You've obviously got to choose to make that decision. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, I think exactly that. I think what it does flag that, like you said, the top answer was 33% of people saying they'd come to faith from birth. As you said, I think that does beg a really interesting discipleship question, doesn't it, for many of us? But again, you know, so much of what we've said is about relationship, it's about conversation. So I think, yeah, again, it doesn't need to be a complete sticking point. But as we enter into relationship with people, to just be gently teasing out, you know, what's your story? What's your backdrop? What's your family backdrop? You know, what are your thoughts or beliefs around people coming to faith, and how does that happen? Again, who knows what interesting dialogue that can open up.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
You're listening to Unapologetic from Premier Unbelievable.
Before we get back to this episode, I just want to take a moment to remind you that this podcast is only possible thanks to the support of listeners like you, which makes your gift today so important. That's why, to thank you for your generous gift today, I'd like you to have a copy of a new ebook from N.T. Wright called What Do We Mean by Heaven? The Resurrection of Jesus and the Rapture. This new ebook offers profound biblical answers to questions about salvation, the resurrection, the afterlife, and the rapture. As you uncover the important answers, you'll also be encouraged and challenged to find peace and hope in the deep mysteries of life. Again, it's our thanks for your gift to help more people live as confident, informed Christians today. To give your gift and download your copy of the N.T. Wright ebook, What Do We Mean by Heaven? The Resurrection of Jesus and the Rapture, simply go to premierinsight.org/unapologetic. That's premierinsight.org/unapologetic. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
You've definitely touched on this already, but obviously the research from Talking Jesus report, but also so many other bits of research seem to back up that actually most practicing Christians come to faith by the age of 18. How do we ensure then that we are prioritizing children and young people, I guess not just in discipleship, but in evangelism? I don't know whether this is your experience, but certainly when I look at churches doing evangelism, the focus is often on adults. How do we make sure that actually children and young people are in that mix as well?
Yeah, like you said, lots of research, and certainly over the last few decades as well, my understanding is, and having been in youth ministry for a long time, that this is not new news to us, is it? People, generally speaking, the majority of people come to faith at a younger age. What is really challenging for the church is that certainly, and again, over recent years, we know that in churches coming out of COVID and meeting together again, as they have been over the last couple of years, one of the biggest challenges has been the changing patterns in attendance, which has meant that many churches across the UK have fewer volunteers. That has directly impacted what we've been able to do as the church in areas of particularly children's ministry and youth ministry. So I guess what this research again just reinforces us is, whilst recognising many of those challenges, actually as churches, we really do need to invest and profile and support our children's workers, our youth, and I'm not talking employed workers, but the volunteers so often in our context, to really be supporting them, praying for them, profiling them in the wider church for the really vastly important work that they do. And again, I know often children's workers, Sunday school, youth workers don't always feel as well supported within the church context. And that is something we can certainly do something about. Just to drop in as well by way of anecdote, another really important and really kind of inspiring statistic that came from some research that EA did with Hope Together back in 2020, launched at the start of the pandemic, but it was our Talking Toddlers research. And the two key statistics that came out of that said that 74% of all families in our communities, not just Christian families, but 74% of all families with children under the age of five attend a church-based toddler group. Well, if that isn't a mission field, possibly the biggest one, then again, you know, that should make us as churches sit up, shouldn't it, and say, wow, how do we support the work of our toddler group leaders, many of whom invest week in, week out, and many that I've met have done so for decades, you know, so faithfully. And the other interesting statistic there is that when we asked through that Talking Toddlers research of the adults who were there, of course, we, you know, invest in the very young, they're the toddlers, but 55% of the adults who attended a church-based, a Christian, distinctively Christian toddler group said that their own faith had been challenged and changed as a direct result of going along to that toddler group. So all in all, I think it does encourage us as churches and church contexts to be really recognising the mission field that is our children, our young people, to be really that bit bolder and braver on occasion, certainly in toddler groups as well, to have that Christian distinctiveness come through strongly, because if they come to our church building, they're expecting that. The research told us that too. But it does show, doesn't it, the powerful element of investing in the young and seeing people make those decisions to come to faith. Yes, they may push back. Yes, they may push back and then come back to faith in their older years. But certainly many people come to faith under the age of 18. And that should really encourage us and impact our practices too as the church.
You mentioned pushback there, Rachel, because I think obviously the numbers around young people coming to faith is really high under 18, but also the numbers around young people leaving the Christian faith in, I guess, their late teens is the sort of particularly significant number. They're also pretty high. I mean, do you think there's anything that we can do to kind of help stop that from happening?
I think my first instinct would be to encourage the church to pray and to pray some more, whether people are, you know, young people are in our midst, whether they go off to university, whether they start out in work, you know, those people that we know and love and deeply care about and their wider families, then prayer is really key. I think as well, looking at young people, yeah, we've come from maybe over the last few decades in terms of youth ministry, certainly going back maybe 10, 20 years plus, a bit more of an attractional model, you know, that we've sort of drawn young people in, we've entertained them, done a great and valiant job. But I think what we're seeing is a raft of, you know, a society of young people who really just want to get stuck in. They want to learn, they want to be involved, they want to grapple with. And certainly what I see in my own context and much wider is that where we actually apprentice young people, if you like, not just into their own faith journey, but into the life of the church, then they're much more likely to actually really engage with faith for themselves, not just come in and consume. So again, therein lies a big conversation, Ruth, isn't there, as to, again, how do we impact the lives of young people? And apart from praying for them and avidly hoping that they will grasp something real of faith that sticks with them both in their teenage years and as part of a lifelong journey, there's certainly elements of prayer for the wider church and for those of us of all ages impacting the lives of young people. And I don't think being invested in young people is an age thing of just for our 20s, 30 something. It's for all generations across the church, isn't it, who can deeply impact the lives of young people. But I think, again, it has to be authentic, lived out, loving. And in many ways, we see God's power move powerfully in the lives of young people, even if they push back, but believing that actually that takes root in their lives and maybe something they come back to as well. With all faith, we pray for that, don't we?
Now, the 18 to 24 age group in your research has the largest group of nuns. I think it was 27%. And again, I think we see that in lots of other research. But yet they seem to be potentially more interested in conversations about faith than some of the other generations. You've obviously touched on this a little bit in some of the other things you've talked about. But why do you think this is? And I guess the question I've got going on in the back of my head is, do you think this marks a seed change going forward? Do you feel like there's actually been a shift and people are now more interested than they used to be?
I think there's a growing sense of voice, isn't there, in terms of all things faith-based and spirituality maybe amongst our younger generations. I think maybe in years gone by, we have, as the Christian church of all ages, but we've retreated and retreated and retreated, maybe hampered in part by the media, who's given us such a bad press, in the sense of, you know, telling us that if we do dare venture into conversation and raise our voice, then people won't want to know. And either if they don't want to know, then they'll, you know, cut us down, think badly of us and so on. What comes through the Talking Jesus research as we've mentioned earlier as well, is the fact that actually where people know us, they really like us. You know, we're engaged in relationship with them and they trust us and all of those other good things. So I think hopefully what my hope would be for individuals and for the church is that this is a sea change, that there's a sense of, yes, we're not just ticking that box as a nominal Christian. If we're saying we're a practicing Christian, we're actually immersed as young adults, let's say, into a church context that is hopefully life-giving. It's not going to be perfect, is it? No church is. But actually, there's a sense of discipleship and people going on a journey. But I hope, and I think I see in many young adults that I know, there is this sense of voice that we want to actually be a bit bolder, braver. We want our friends to come to know Jesus. We're prepared to stick our neck a little bit above the parapet. And hopefully discerning that actually, you know, when we think, you know, yes, it might impact what they think of us, well, actually, that's not too detrimental to our own faith journey. And I think what I've seen in others as well is this sense of, you know, where we're in relationship with people, we ask ourselves that question, well, what's the worst that can happen? They might not want to know. They might come back to us at a later date to explore conversation. But I think where I see young adults stepping up, leaning in, being holding on to God, being a bit bolder and braver, and having a church around them that is cheering them on, then there are some great good news stories and great conversations happening. And many young adults will say where they've dared to take that step to open up conversations, that it's had maybe an altogether different response, a more positive response than they might have imagined. And that goes on to encourage them more.
Rachel, when you're talking about the sort of youngest generation in your research, it's Gen Z, the young adults, I guess, you know, people sort of argue about the statistics, but it's sort of roughly anyone born between 1995, 1997, and then 2010, 2012. But are there any specific insights you think we need to know about the even younger generation, Generation Alpha, who I guess, for want of argument's sake, are probably sort of 14 years and younger? So I guess your kids would be firmly within Generation Alpha. Is there anything we need to know about Generation Alpha and how we can help them with their faith or sort of help reach those outside of the church with the Christian faith?
I think one of the first things that comes to my mind as you say that, and absolutely point to the same age as my own children, is that looking again across the youth work world, the church, and well outside of the church, is that we do need to almost assume no knowledge in terms of Bible literacy or God's big story. You know, even in recent months or certainly over the last year, you know, the Christmas story, the Easter story, again, I'm sure many people have spoken to that, but, you know, it's surprising sometimes, isn't it, as to just how very little is known. So I think in terms of engaging with people, actually, we need to go in assuming that they may not know, but they may have a level of intrigue about, you know, what the Christian faith is about. Certainly that seems to come to the fore. You enter into conversations or even look at with young people at a Bible passage. And some of the questions that they'll ask, completely off the wall, but brilliant in terms of just this intrigue as to, well, what, you know, how is she related to her? Or why did she do that? And this, that, and the other. And there's a real joy, I think, in engaging young people around conversations about faith or about the Bible. And in ways that can just bring it to life, in ways that maybe for us who've been Christians for many years, you know, may not even see things in the same way. So I think, yes, I think it's that sense of assuming no knowledge. And I think also just, again, recognising some of the big challenges, certainly I see around my boys and their own education, their own schooling and so on, the big questions around gender, around sexuality, around all of these things, which are so in their eye line. And the fact that as Christian parents, I think, and indeed as youth workers or church leaders, I think, again, we need to be skilled up and genned up and enough to sort of know, you know, what's our Christian position? What do we think? What does the Bible say? But equally not stand back from speaking to our young people about some of these conversations. Again, it doesn't need to mean that we have all the answers, but we do need to have those conversations with them. What do they think? What do we think? What's our experience been? What's the Bible say? And try and, in sometimes the messiness of these conversations, and certainly having edged into that with my own two boys, recognizing some of the confusion that's out there, but also recognizing that if we don't have that conversation with our own children, our own young people, then we leave them to the wilds, if you like, of kind of the broader moral or, you know, a wider sphere of culture. So I think there is, again, that sense of we need to find our voice, recognize the backdrop that our young people are in, but not shy away from the fact that we can have a part to play in not only exposing some of the truth of what God has for them, what he wants to share with them from his word, but also journeying with them And there's a joy in that as well, isn't there, to see them grappling with stuff as we do too, but hopefully seeing them journey towards Jesus in that as well.
Rachel, having had 2 years to reflect on the Talking Jesus research that was conducted in 2022, what do you think are the most important insights from the whole report? And I guess, how is this report still relevant to us in 2024?
Well, many things. The more that I speak to this research and indeed my colleagues across the Six Way Partnership and that I mentioned, I think if anything, it just becomes more topical, more insightful, and a real joy to speak to, in the sense that it does just ignite a conversation around evangelism. I think one of the things that I feel really passionate about, and this has come again out of not only delving into the research and challenging myself with it too, but also speaking to many church leaders, is a question around how do we as the UK church look to not just releasing the evangelists in our context, but looking at our whole church communities and how we really encourage the everyday witness. Some of the things we've been talking about, the fact that the world out there is open, it's hurting, it's seeking out some of these questions of life and questions of faith, but how do we release people in our own church communities? My own story was one of having grown up in a Christian family, and I remember being in my early 20s and thinking, I really do want my friends to come to know Jesus, but it felt like a really burdensome, challenging task. I remember having this visual in my mind of, it felt like the challenge of evangelism felt like I was wearing a rucksack filled with many rocks that was weighing me down. And yet I, at one point in time, I really noticed that actually the baggage was all on me. It wasn't on my friends, who were very open to conversation. And, you know, going from talking about the weather to the holidays to the football scores to the, you know, and then something of faith, or something of where God had answered prayer, and then back to something much more, you know, trivial and normal and everyday. And I remember a point in time of virtually in my mind just stripping this rucksack off, thinking, enough, I'm done with this baggage. And I can only say, Ruth, it was absolutely transformational for me, of just being able to edge more genuinely, more openly into those normal everyday conversations, but praying for my friends, being authentic, developing relationships, and praying that God would give those opportunities. So part of my passion coming out of this, and I think highly relevant for the church over the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years, would be that question, how do we release all of those in our church communities? Not asking them to do more, because we're all busy people and weary and all the rest of it. But how do we look at where God has put us? Who is in our sphere of influence? Where do we find ourselves? And actually, how can we engage in those life-giving, potentially life-giving conversations with people in every day? Because I don't know if you agree, but it strikes me that if we had armies of people in our churches prepared and ready and willing to speak of something of the truth of the gospel in those everyday conversations where appropriate, then actually we'd see many, many more people across the UK come into faith as a result. So there's lots in this research. 2 years on, it still is infusing and encouraging people in their vision strategies and their churches in evangelism context. And the toolkit of resources that we've put together as a partnership on talkingjesus.org, really hope will just only go to encourage church leaders and individuals in their own personal witness. So yes, we will keep speaking to the research until we do it again, and just pray that it will really encourage the church in doing all that we're about.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much. I'll make sure that there's obviously a link to the Talking Jesus research and all of the resources in with the podcast and with the video. But thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Unapologetic. I'm Ruth Jackson. And as always, you can find out more about our guests through the links with today's show. We would love to hear your feedback. Do drop us an email with your thoughts at unbelievable@premier.org.uk, or get in touch via social media. And don't forget, there are more shows, articles and resources at our website, premierunbelievable.com. You can also register there for the chance to win a free book. That's premierunbelievable.com. And if you enjoy listening to Unapologetic, please do consider rating and reviewing it. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
You've been listening to Unapologetic. For more shows, resources, and our newsletter, visit premierunbelievable.com.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe, like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more, all made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.